welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, beat the Borg. Can Shankland fire Hearts past Rosenberg? Can Rangers serve it out in Switzerland for a playoff date in the Champions League? And should Kieran Tierney tear up his time at Arsenal? Hello, I am your host, Andrew Slavin. Welcome one and all to another episode of the Scottish Football Show, where we select the best and brightest stories to highlight from the weekend. And here to help me wade through it all, it's West Ham senior producer. Is it the last time I'll be saying that, Laura?
It is indeed.
Oh my God. It is actually your last week.
Okay, yeah.
There's a slight delay. We'll get through it. And can we believe in better? Yes, we can. With Sky Sports, Andrew Dixon. Hello, Andrew. Can you believe it's Laura's last week at West Ham?
I know, West Ham's awful summer where they only seem to be losing players, not getting any in, is continuing with another exit. So I'm still very much staying at Sky. Not that anybody cares, but I'm still very much there. But yeah, good luck wherever you're off to next, Laura.
You can't say, can you, Laura?
Well, I can. I'm not going to. I'm taking a couple of weeks off from the podcast, and then when I'm back, I will tell you all about having started my new role and where it is. So exciting times.
Ah, I'm sure it will be an explosive one, Laura. into some funnies, Laura. Can you kick things off for us? We want some funny stories from the weekend. Tell me.
Okay, kind of clutching at straws here for the Scottish angle, but
good start, clutching at straws.
did anyone see Martin Neal doing the Carabao Cup draw the other day, where this rivals Rod Stewart doing cup draws? It was brilliant. I think it was live on Sky, actually, Andrew. They did this.
I think it was, yeah.
He was pulling the balls out and holding a mic at the same time, and instead of going number three, holding, like, talking to Mike, he would go number three into the ball. Number 21.
I'm watching it now, it's so funny already.
This is number 23, 24, and number one.
The beautiful thing, really, already I can tell, is he's not drunk like Rod Stewart was.
So he has no excuse.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all had a really good laugh at it when Rod Stewart did it, but if there's not actually anything wrong, as far as we can see, with Martin O'Neill, and he's still talking to the inanimate object in his hand, then yeah, that's a wee bit concerning for him. So, but good television all the same, though.
Very much. One thing I enjoyed at the weekend was a photo that popped up. It was a picture of Dick Campbell getting booked. And it said with a tagline, "Why does this look like he's booked the bus driver?" Because the away team's turned up late. I mean, it's quite funny. I mean, Dick Campbell doesn't give a fuck, let's face it. But he just does look a bit like a bus driver. It's so good.
It's either that or it's almost as if he's kind of just trying to get in for the last 10 minutes before closing, and the bouncer's like, "Nah, you're not getting in. I told you, Dick, you're not getting in." I mean, Dick Campbell is very much an absolute giant in Scottish football, isn't he? I remember,
legend.
And we're going back a long, long time now, but my kind of first staff job in journalism was with the Press and Journal up in Aberdeen, away back in, 2004, 2005. Wow. My colleague Paul Smith, son of Dave Smith, former Rangers player. Paul's written a few Rangers books, and I think he's been involved in the museum launch recently as well. Him and I were working together at the time, and between us, as you would do as journalists, you would kind of do your Friday previews for the papers. So we at that point covered all the Angus clubs, and I think Dick at that point, although he's been at Arbroath for a number of years now, he was the Brecon City manager back then. Mm. Paul phones him up for his usual Friday phone call, where he phones Dick for 5-10 minutes to get the lowdown on what's happening at Glebe Park. Phones Dick and says, "Hi Dick, Paul Smith from the Press and Journal, just phoning up to have a chat ahead of the game tomorrow." And Dick just goes, "Aye, it's going to be World War III, son," and then hangs up. And that was your preview. So, Dick, and I'm sure anybody who's ever come across Dick Campbell in some way or another in Scottish football will have some kind of story about him. But yeah, that was very much a Dick Campbell story. So quite funny to see him looking absolutely outraged with his weekend exploits as well.
The other thing I enjoyed was covering the West Ham press conference the other day. The English journalist asked David Moyes about the England women's football team, which is, you know, she's asking a Scottish person that works in men's football about England national teams. Not the greatest art, but she basically asked, how good is it that the England national team are doing so well in the Women's World Cup? And David Moyes handled it very well. He basically said that he's scared of the Scottish women and they wouldn't let him back into Scotland if he was to sit there and praise them for how good they're doing right now. And said, look, he gave a very diplomatic answer of how good it's women's football is getting a lot of coverage right now. But in terms of England's success, nah.
The Scottish women will batter me if I get talking about the Scottish women. I'll not be able to cross the border again. But no, like, the biggest thing is for me is women's football is doing so, so well. And it's only right that it gets a chance to be on the stages and play. But England? Well, I don't know if I can quite say that.
That reporter knew what they were doing, surely.
It was actually her comment afterwards was, I don't think the Scottish players will listen to BBC Radio 1, so it's okay if you say it. Which was a really, really odd comeback to give. I'm thinking, obviously they'll listen to it. But yeah, I thought David Moyes handled it very, very well. He had a little bit of a joke and gave a very diplomatic answer at the same time.
There was also, I can't believe my club did this, but Queen of the South, the night before they played Edinburgh City, thought it would be a really good idea to post all 15 goals that they scored against Edinburgh last season the night before they're about to play Edinburgh City. I'm like, I mean, talk about tempting fate and poking the bear, man. Like, they ended up losing the lead after like the first 20 minutes or something. I was like, why are you doing this? Do it afterwards. Like, I know it's good. You might defend it, Laura. But I was just thinking, oh man, like, do it later. Not just before a game. It's quite funny though.
I can see the reason they've done it. And I don't have a problem with them celebrating previous results against the teams that they're going to play against. But I think they could have been smarter about it because they could have jazzed it up a bit, made it into a bit of a kind of hype video, made it a wee bit sexier rather than just.
It's only camera ones,
down.
Laura.
Yeah,
how do you make a hype video out of camera one? Just really cool graphics. The old lock stop type.
Oh, it's just, I mean, yeah, disguise it a wee bit better if you're going to just put out how wonderful we are against this club in
previous
matches.
Yeah, we always beat Edinburgh City. We always lose to Alloa, which is what happened last week.
The thing is, clubs will put out a lot of their previous results against clubs in the build-up to games. It's not uncommon. I think just other clubs disguise it a bit better.
Well, thankfully, Queens won 2-1. Thank God. That would have been horrible. Not really a funny story at all, this, to be fair, but something that's happening down in London as well, really, as we are all sitting here right now talking about Scottish football. The situation with Kieran Tierney, it's not great at Arsenal right now. He's only played 15 minutes of the Community Shield against Man City. Wasn't in the squad at all over the weekend against Nottingham Forest. My question to you guys is, like, with everything that's been going on, should he, I'll say this to you, Andrew, do you think he should be staying at Arsenal or do you think he should be pushing for a move?
It's an interesting one for Kieran Tierney because he has just very, very gradually just sunk down the pecking order a little bit there. And, you know, he's still, you know, I mean, although he wasn't involved at the weekend, I mean, it's not that he's been bombed out. I'm quite sure that he will be, you know, if he does stay beyond the closure of the transfer window, I'm quite sure he's going to be still fairly regularly in and about the squad, not necessarily starting every game, but he'll be on the bench regularly if he's not playing. It's a bit of an odd one, though, because he has, as I say, his standing at Arsenal has just kind of receded ever so slightly over a fairly long period of time. It's just kind of, he's gone backwards a little bit. I mean, the thing is, where does he go? You know, is his stock still high enough that he would have interest in him from other Premier League teams? I would suggest very much so, yeah. I mean, even though it's not really happening for him at Arsenal right at the moment, I'm quite sure if you gave the other 19 clubs a chance to sign Kieran Tierney, I mean, you would fancy, a third to half of them to be interested. And it might not necessarily be all the very top teams, but Newcastle at the moment, who are in the Champions League this season, are kind of credited with an ongoing interest over an extended period of time over the summer. My understanding is that remains to be the case. You know, a bit of interest from abroad as well, and you know, clearly Celtic fans will look at it and say, well, you know, is there any chance we can maybe bring him back to Celtic as well? And I think for the moment, personally, where his stock is, given his age, I mean, he's you know, still got an awful lot of years left in him. Mm-hmm. I think players like Kieran Tierney, when they leave Scottish football to go and play in the Premier League, they then remain in the Premier League for quite a long time. And I suspect that's what's going to happen with him. Whether it's at Arsenal or not, I'm not sure. I think he may well have to move, even if it's a loan move, you know. Might not be the worst thing, but I still see him being in the Premier League for quite a while yet.
Yeah, the thing is, Laura, he's always going to get played for Scotland, that's for sure, even if he is on the bench for Arsenal.
That's the thing. It's, I mean, obviously, Steve Clarke is conscious of putting in boys that are on form, but you can't not pick Kieran Tierney regardless. We know what he can do, so he's always going to get picked. He's world class. He's one of our best players in the entire squad. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. So he's always going to get into the team. But the worry then is, even if that is the case, he's not going to be sharp. And you don't want him going into crunch qualifiers, and he's not got match sharpness under his belt. So as a Scotland fan, I want him to get out, and I want him to be playing week in, week out. It's as simple as that. And he's obviously been linked with going to Real Sociedad, which I think we've all talked several times in the show about Scottish talent going abroad and how wonderful it is to give them that education and grounding and really kind of broaden their horizons. I'd be absolutely behind that. He's been linked with Newcastle as well. Again, it's staying in the same league, but it's still at a high level. So, of course, I'd support that as well. Celtic, I'm not too keen on, because he's been there, he's done it. I don't think he's pushing himself if he comes back to Celtic. He's went on to a higher level, and he should be pushing himself to keep going right now. And I feel like going to Celtic is almost a step back at this stage in his career, albeit later on, yes, bring him home, as the Celtic fans keep saying, but I think it's too early at this point for him, and he really should just be looking to go up and up and maintain that sort of progression that he's making.
Obviously, the thing is as well, with, you know, with him potentially, like you're saying about Real Sociedad there, you know, in days gone by, Paul Lambert going to Borussia Dortmund, going away back to Steve Archibald, going to Barcelona. Back then, you know, Scottish players going to play in kind of big leagues abroad was a fairly uncommon thing. Whereas I think we've seen in the last couple of years, quite a few Scottish and English players as well going to play in Italy and Germany. And, you know, Jude Bellingham's just gone to Real Madrid from Borussia Dortmund. You know, we've got quite a few Scottish players have gone to Italy in the last 12 months as well. So maybe that apprehension that has been there in the past for whatever reason, yeah, I'm sure it's been that there's been more interest in Scottish players as well because of the progression that's been made. But I think also, if there was any apprehension from the players themselves about moving abroad, that's maybe ebbed away a little bit by the fact that, you know, one, then two, three, four players have gone. So very feasible option as well. As I say, I think Tierney will remain in the Premier League. I think Arsenal might be a bit selective about where they allow him to go, because I don't think they'll want him to go. Although, like, Newcastle are interested, and Newcastle have started the season exceptionally well against Villa, Arsenal will look at them as big challengers. So do they want to sell their rival? You know, that's questionable. So but I think I'd be quite surprised if Tierney is playing anywhere other than the English Premier League come 3 or 4 weeks time.
That's a shame, because if he did go to Spain, he could always rely on his pal Kevin Bridges to teach him some Spanish. I think he's taught the whole of Scotland how to order a table for four. So there you go. Una mesa para cuatro, por favor.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahoney, right foot. Whipshot. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
Before we start with what happened around the SPFL at the weekend, we're going to begin with things in the capital, and with Hearts, in fact. It's been a summer of change at the club, with a little bit of confusion sprinkled over the top. Stephen Naismith was named technical director instead of manager, and Frank McAvoy was appointed as head coach. Last week, we saw a comfortable victory over St Johnstone, but they were held to a 0-0 draw against Kilmarnock on Sunday in a rather lacklustre display. So we've got Lauren Shankland's late goal away at Rosenborg in a 2-1 defeat, which is the only glimmer of hope going into Thursday's second leg Europa Conference League qualifier at Tynecastle. Laurie Dunsire, Hearts TV commentator and podcast producer of Scarves Around the Funnel. I got that right, Laurie. That's right, isn't it?
That's, yes, spot on, of course, yeah.
Big Hearts fan joining us to, you know, tell us what's going on at Tynecastle. So just first of all, how did you find the weekend's result?
Poor. performance and result wasn't the best, playing a Kilmarnock side that unfortunately enjoy playing at Tynecastle and got 6 wins in the last 6 years at our ground. So it's a happy hunting ground for them. Going into the game, though, you're playing the team that had the worst away record in the Premiership last season. Hearts generally pretty good at home if you take away Kilmarnock out of the factor. Take away the Kilmarnock factor, but it just wasn't great from Hearts. It wasn't a lot of tempo. Kilmarnock, very solid under Dennett McInnes. Difficult to break down, and this is where Hearts have struggled in the last few years under Robbie Nielsen. Towards the end of his campaign, the big issues with fans were games where we had bulk of possession, lots of sideway passes, but not really any penetration. And it was the same on Sunday, 64% possession. There was one shot on target, and it's one of these where I was really racking my brain to remember what shot actually counted as being on target. Because if one side was going to win it, it was going to be Kilmarnock. So very frustrating, a bit too predictable, no tempo about the game. Not what you want ahead of a big European match, but at the same time, it's second game of the season. You don't want the alarm bells ringing too early on, but certainly big improvement needed.
Obviously, you mentioned that big game on Thursday. It's such a crunch match. How much priority is being given to the Conference League this season? Because surely you want to build on what happened last year.
I think it's massive for Hearts. I mean, every round you go through with it, the prize money you can get, it's very important. Obviously, the group stage is where it's at for Scottish clubs. You know, the potential 5 million carat that Hearts very disappointingly threw away in the end of last season to Aberdeen. I would say they've had still a decent chance of getting to the playoff, getting to the group stage. Percentages go down a fair bit. You know, Rosenborg are a reasonably big name, but they're not the side they used to be. Sitting eighth in the Norwegian league just now, finished third last season. Pauk of Greece or Split of Croatia is likely to be the Greeks. We'd offer even tougher opponents in the playoffs. So I think there's got to be an emphasis on doing our best in it, but at the same time, realistically, even at our best, we're still going to be underdogs to make it to the group stage. And that's where the real money's at. The Rosenborg game is interesting because although we lost the first leg, I have to say I was not overly impressed by the Norwegians. It almost gave me a little bit more hope after seeing them that, you know, they're very beatable. That said, they've obviously done their homework because they did exactly what Kilmarnock did for spells and what other teams have done. They let us have possession. We had the bulk of possession, lots of knocking it around the park, but they hit quickly on the break. So they're going to come to Tynecastle. They're going to frustrate us. They're going to try and get the home fans on the backs of the players. They're not going to want to give us any momentum. It's going to be a big ask. And I'm just concerned that Sunday didn't give the fans that sort of boost that you would have hoped for. I think Sunday, a good win, first home game of the season. You go into that Rosenborg game and the fans are really up for it. Right now, we've got that little feeling that if Rosenborg kill the tempo early on, it could turn into a bit of a stuffy evening, which is not what works well at Tynecastle for Hearts.
That's interesting because I ultimately straight away think about the atmosphere you get at Tynecastle for away fans and for away teams. It can be a really difficult place to play because it's so tight and compact. It's a wonderful atmosphere if you've ever, well, you've been there, but any listeners, it's such a great place to go if you're an away fan. But it's intimidating, Laurie, and that's what the players will be hoping for Rosenborg.
Yeah, it's intimidating, but there's also pressure on the home players. And I think that's one thing with Tynecastle. And, you know, having spoken to previous Hearts manager Robbie Nielsen, he spoke about that as well, that some players can't live up to that. And you've got different levels of it. Wow. You know, someone at Hearts, so maybe they move to Rangers or Celtic and then they can't live up to the expectation there. Hearts sign players from other leagues or maybe from teams lower down the division or lower leagues, and there's an expectation when you come to Tynecastle. They're very demanding. You know, if you're playing anyone, they expect Hearts to be controlling the game. And I count Rangers and Celtic in that because Hearts fans can be fairly unrealistic at times in demands. But whoever that comes to Tynecastle, Hearts fans will expect Hearts to be the team on top, Hearts to be the team winning the match. So as much as it can be intimidating for away teams, if they do what Kilmarnock did at the weekend really well, which was sit behind the ball, not give Hearts a chance to get that kind of momentum built on the pitch or in the stands, then suddenly that pressure can switch because the fans don't have much patience. You're sitting 30 minutes in at home and you've not created a clear chance. Then actually it's the home players that start to feel that the crowd's on top of them.
Yeah.
It's obviously a bit of a strange setup just now in a dugout because of the European games. Just obviously for context, for people that don't understand it, Stephen Naismith doesn't have the badges to be classed as the manager right now in UEFA matches. So obviously Frank McAvoy's taking over that side of things. Like, what's the fans' reaction to this, Laurie? Do they care, or is it just a kind of official paperwork thing and we all know what's actually happening behind the scenes?
A bit of somewhere in between. I think the fans, a lot of the fans care. There's a bit of division about it in terms of some people don't like it. I think optics is the buzzword that gets thrown out there, that it doesn't look great. You get that chewing the fat meme that goes out there with the two coaches come from the dugout, one copy and the other. And, you know, I laugh at it, because if it was the other team, I'd be doing the exact same thing. If it was Hibs in the same boat, I'd be ripping the piss out of them as well. So it's a tricky one, because I think internally, so for the players, and again, if we had Craig Gordon on our podcast a few weeks ago, he said, look, there's no doubt about the structure internally. The players, there's no problem there. They know who's in charge, who's doing different things. For fans, I think it will come down to results. You know, what it does give is a little bit more, it's a stick to beat the team with if things aren't going well. You know, if Hearts aren't getting results, then people start to question, is the management structure clear? Is that the problem, that you don't know who's giving proper guidance? Is it McAvoy? Is it Naismith? If they're getting results, you know, it'll quickly get pushed to the side and people will forget about it. So I think realistically, it doesn't actually have much of an impact on the players and what's going on. But I think from the outside, a lot of fans don't like it. And like any football fan, they'll find any little thing to pick holes in. So I don't know ultimately if it's going to be a successful management team. It's still too early to tell for me. But in terms of the who's in charge and who's doing what, let's put it this way, I don't think the players are in any doubt about that. Whether that means it'll work long term, that's a whole other question.
Yeah, no, it's a free hit for the press as well, like you say. Like, if things are going bad, it ultimately goes towards that. There's a wee rumour kind of doing the rounds at the moment, Laurie, potentially in the future of Lawrence Shankland. There's no doubting his huge importance to the club and the squad. You know, Championship clubs, I know, are definitely looking at him. Bids possibly coming in. There's even a little inkling of maybe the Saudi League, which, it's hard to really, you know, begrudge any player who wants to go over there, other than really maybe moral levels. But the money is just unbelievable, that it's hard to kind of say, like, oh, well, you know, how dare he go over there? But what are your thoughts, Laurie, on that? Do you think Lawrence is going to probably stay with Hearts?
I don't know how solid the interest from Saudi is. At very least, it's being talked about behind the scenes somewhere, but I don't know if that's Saudi club inquired or if that's an agent trying to push their client to certain clubs. Lawrence Shankland hasn't looked quite himself at the start of the season, I have to say. He doesn't look quite fully fit, fully sharp just now. He's looked very frustrated in the games we've played, and that's partly a byproduct of what I've said before, that we've not been at our best, we've not had a good tempo. We've lost Josh Ginnelly in the summer. Now, Hearts were at their best last season when Shankland was sitting behind Josh Ginnelly. Shankland is a terrific player. He's actually not in his best role at Hearts, playing as the focal point, though. He doesn't really have the pace to play as the out-and-out number nine off the shoulder. So Ginnelly playing as the nine worked really well, because Shankland linked the play, played off him, and Ginnelly had the pace. Hearts are kind of trying to replicate that with some new signings. We brought in Kiyosuke Tagawa, a Japanese international. We've also brought in a Costa Rican, Kenneth Vargas. But these are still new signings to try and bed in. So he cut a bit of a forlorn figure at the weekend against Kilmarnock. He was lucky not to be sent off, actually. He'd been booked, committed a couple of little petulant fouls after that. So obviously that starts the rumour mill going as well. You know, is his head gone? Is it somewhere else? I don't know myself. It's hard to tell whether he's just frustrated because the team haven't been attacking as free-flowing as he'd like. But will he stay or not? I think it'll come down to money for Hearts, because he's obviously a huge asset. 30 goals in 50 games. Top scorer last season, a high scorer in a season since the late 80s. You know, we talk about 3 million, 4 million, 5 million. It sounds a lot of money, but could Hearts find a player who can score almost 30 goals a season and someone who they could afford the wages for, even if they spent that money? Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. Right now, I've not heard of any solid interest in terms of bids, but I wouldn't be surprised if a Saudi club did come in that Lawrence Shankland would be interested, because why wouldn't you? Relatively speaking, Scottish footballers, this could be that life-changing one, which I always kind of roll my eyes at a little bit when you're already earning, you know, 400 grand a week. But if you're earning 5 grand a week and you get offered 200 grand a week, It's hard not to be tempted, should we say. Hypothetically, it might be hard to convince him to stick around.
Well, less of the hypotheticals. Just before we wrap up, Laurie, I want to just touch on Craig Gordon quickly. We've been seeing, obviously, some photos of him looking very happy in training. When are we likely to see him back? And I promise it's not just me selfishly wanting him back for the international break in September or October, but please tell me he's coming back soon.
Liar, Laura, you're a liar.
He certainly plans to be. I'd be shocked if he was anywhere near the Scotland team, especially by that next international break. I think he's planning on being back between now and Christmas for Hearts. There's no definitive date. You know, I mean, he suffered a double leg break. He's now got a big metal rod in his leg. And being Craig Gordon, they had to struggle to find one long enough to put in his leg because he's obviously fairly tall. But he's a very determined character. And I think, you know, he plans to try and play as long as he can. If that means to his mid-40s, then he's happy to keep going. And we saw Gigi Buffon playing to that point recently. Goalkeepers, it doesn't matter so much. I think Craig Gordon keeps himself very fit and healthy. He is very determined, and he came on our podcast a few weeks ago, and that's still his plan, is to come back. He's in training. He's a long way off being ready to play a match. But I would be stunned if we didn't see him again in a Hearts shirt. It's not a given that he'll get his place straight back in the Hearts team. I'm pretty sure he will get a game again. He's club captain still. Scotland's a tougher one. You'd be looking a bit further down the line. I think you'd be looking into next year, potentially, obviously, the next tournament.
So Germany, but then. Perfect timing.
Yes, exactly. So if Scotland need a goalkeeper and he's back playing, then I think he'll certainly be in the mix. And I don't think he expects to walk back into the Scotland squad. But I don't think we have a huge amount of options that jump out. You know, if Craig Gordon is fit and ready and back on form, even if he is 41 by that point,
totally,
I would never write him off. He's a terrific captain to have as well. I think some things with Craig Gordon, I noticed last season, it was at a Hearts event. So not only had he been playing midweek weekend for Hearts, he'd recently had another baby. So he was only weeks, at least months old at that point. And an evening event at Hearts, and who turns up? It's club captain Craig Gordon, still there shaking hands, speaking to fans. So he's always very committed, and I think that shows across all parts of his life, be that when he's off the field, when he's on the field, when he's in training. He still feels he's a big part of what's going on at the club, even when he's not playing. So I think he is a terrific character to have around. And as I say, I would be surprised if he didn't come back and play for Hearts. And he's obsessed with records as well. He's always wanting to get to his next milestone. He needs one more European appearance to make more European appearances than any other Hearts player. Hearts have got a big task to try and make that happen this season, because he's not going to be ready until group stages.
who has that record, Laurie?
At the moment, it's joint between Henry Smith, another goalkeeper, and Stephen Presley.
Oh, wow. Elvis.
Yeah. Some Hearts fans don't like you mentioning his name these days, but yeah.
Oh, he's still in the record books. Maybe that's why Craig Gordon wants to take his name off the list.
Yeah, he's already taken his name off the list in terms of most Scotland caps while nice. A Hearts player. So he's already beaten that one. So he's slowly edging
so
Elvis
funny.
Out of the Hearts history books.
Also in action in the same night is Hibs. They travel to Switzerland for their return tie against Luzerne. 3-1 up in this leg, in this tie, I should say, but also coming off the back of a 2-0 defeat to 2-1, sorry, I should say, to Motherwell at the weekend. We never know what we're getting with Hibs at the moment, do we, Laura?
No, absolutely not. It's you watch.
Cool,
them...
moving on.
I mean, you watch them in Europe and you're like, great, right, goals, yay, it's great. And I'm so excited watching them. And then you watch them at Fir Park against Motherwell and it's like, what? they're yeah. so miles off it. It's incredible. Like, who are you? Yeah, I mean, that result against Motherwell, they were just, I mean, they could barely string anything together in attack. They were just offering nothing. They were second to every ball. It kind of puts a fear into you if you are hoping that Hibs get through to then play Aston Villa, which would be an absolutely class tie. What a showdown that would be. But at the same time, I can't see how they would beat them. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it would just be be a humiliation for them the way they're going right now. They need to sort themselves out. And okay, Luzerne are clearly not at the level for competing against them. And hopefully that doesn't come back to bite me and they see them off in the second leg. But anything beyond this, the way they're going right now, they need to step up a gear and sort themselves out.
Andrew, I don't know if you've heard any or any standout quotes in your career so far, but I love Lee Johnson's kind of post-match dissection of matches sometimes. And he came up with another belter after this game. He said, "Today was poor, but as hungry men, we must look for our supper." Honestly, he's got so many Johnsonisms, as I call them. This is class.
I think he's at the point now, and he's not even been in Scottish football for that long, but we're at the point now with Lee Johnson where he's just trying to out Lee Johnson himself. You know, it's like, he is the David Brent of Scottish football. But I mean, you know, for me, I mean, I'm not a Hibs fan, but if I was a Hibs fan, I'd get slightly frustrated with the constant kind of sound bites from Lee Johnson where he's just trying to say something a bit, you know, profound or poetic or whatever it is he's trying to do. I'd far rather see his team be a bit more consistent. I mean, that, you know, they had a great result and a great performance against Luzerne last midweek, thoroughly deserved their victory. To go from that to losing the way they did at Fir Park, and even going back to the first round against the team from Andorra, I've been to the ground, played that game in Andorra, kind of stumbled upon a Champions League first round qualifier there a few years ago while I was on holiday, and it was me and about 500 other people. It's not a glamorous location, so I can
it looked
see
like a leisure centre.
Oh, honestly, I mean, it was just a patch of grass next to the town centre, and that was it, with mountains all around. It was quite picturesque, but it's not exactly a hotbed of European football. In one sense, I can sort of see how you might come unstuck, because you might turn up and just not fancy it. But at the same time, Hibs players are of a standard where they should be better than that, and they should be turning up and winning games there quite comfortably. You know, instead, they make life difficult for themselves. They're very comfortable in the return leg, so they do get through. But they're so Jekyll and Hyde at the moment, Hibs, and they have been a bit like that under Lee Johnson. So, you know, what are we going to get next? I don't know. I mean, if they do get through to play Villa, then that would be great. But even though Villa were well beaten at the weekend by Newcastle, I would fear for Hibs a little bit if they were to get through and then perform the way they can find themselves not performing sometimes.
Just two more Johnsonisms that I came across while looking back on some of his quotes was, "I get up, I'll try and do a Johnson here. I get up every morning, I take a big sniff of air and say, I'm turning up today and I'm going to leave this place better than it was 24 hours ago." That was
honestly
probably more.
That is David Brent. That is just David Brent.
Here's another one. This is brilliant. I went to Real Madrid to watch sessions in the academy, to Barcelona to watch the B team, to New York City. This is a terrible act. This is just a generic.
It sounds
Easter
like the West Ham office.
Glasgow. Yeah, no. This is it. I had 2 hours with Pep Guardiola over two games, which was great. It wasn't just me picking his brains. It was 60-40. He was actually genuinely interested in my ideas. Actually, genuinely. We had a real fierce debate about high back lines and the speed of your back four. They played such a high line, so I created a quick free kick, lifted over their line, and nearly got them. It's just
Lee Johnson got 2 hours of Pep Guardiola's time. Come
yeah,
on.
Exactly.
Not a chance.
I know. Laura, it was a good day for Motherwell, obviously, at the weekend. Great stat as well came out from SPL Stats, does them for the SPFL website. Looking back, including the end of last season, Motherwell are now unbeaten in 12 matches in all competitions, which is their best run since December 1984 to March 1986, when Tommy McLean's side went on a 14-game unbeaten run on their way to promotion to the second tier. It kind of, and if you go even further, it's only 2 defeats and 5 draws in their last 24 matches. It's just Kettlewell has turned this team into a really strong unit, even with the additions that have came in the summer.
Yeah, it's going well, because you look at like the four strikers all scoring so far at this early stage of the season. The midfield three of Slattery, Spittle and Lennon Miller, they look good together. And I think that was a wee bit of a concern with the likes of Sean Goss leaving in the summer. It was like, how was that midfield three going to look? They look great. Liam Kelly looks like he's kind of getting back to his best again. I know he kind of went through a few wee blip like last season, but he looks solid. Even Dan Casey as well in defence, he's looking solid. It's looking good everywhere across the pitch right now. So yeah, it's going good.
Going good so far. Two games in, Laura. What could go wrong? Also in Europe, although maybe by the time you listen to this, the game's already been played, but Rangers do go to Switzerland as well to play Servette. They've got a 2-1 lead, but they did get a glossy scoreline at Ibrox over the weekend, a 4-0 win over Livingston. But Livy have never won at Ibrox, so probably no real surprise, Andrew, with the result of the weekend. I think it's 22 games, I think, Livingston have been at Ibrox and never won a game. Mad.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? On the face of it, 4-0 and four new signings scoring is a pretty good day's work for Rangers. In all honesty, it was probably a kind of heavier scoreline than Rangers merited. They made quite hard work of it. And, you know, they brought in 9 new players. They've lost a lot of personnel over the last kind of 2-3 months as well, including some really big players for the club in the past. So, you know, when you have that turnover, it's going to take time. And, you know, I saw some complaints from people about how Rangers performed in pre-season against Hamburg and Hoffenheim and what have you. Like, pre-season performances, and honestly, results do not matter. Rangers beat Real Madrid a couple of years ago. It means absolutely nothing. I do not think Real Madrid fans came away from that going, oh no, what are we going to do? Well, what did they won the European Cup at the end of that season? So it was okay. Pre-season really means nothing. You know, you can lose all your games and still go on and win a treble. As it is, Rangers look kind of how I expect they would look with the amount of faces that have changed. On the face of it, there are quite a few good signings. Jack Bullen has looked really competent in goals. Yeah. I think Danilo come good. Sam Lammers, yeah, I quite like the look of him. Cifuentes, I think, is going to be an excellent player for Rangers. But, you know, the jury's out on some as well. Servette, last week, I was at the game at Ibrox, 2-1. After 15 minutes, you thought it was going to be a 4-5-0 job. And to be honest, what is kind of slightly concerning for Rangers is Servette really didn't bring anything to the table and yet somehow came away with a 2-1 defeat. Didn't really offer much up front. Got a penalty, which kind of, for those at the game, it was a little bit confusing because didn't know exactly what had happened and then heard at halftime it was a stonewaller, I think. So, yeah. But, you know, it leaves them in a really difficult position now going into this game. And obviously, you know, you might be listening to this after the game, but what I would say going into it is Rangers are not firing in all cylinders yet. Sema, for me, although he scored at the weekend, it was a tap-in, and otherwise I was at the Hamburg friendly and I think he missed a hat-trick of sitters. I've not seen a lot from Sema that suggests that he's going to be the answer up front. For me, Cyril Dessers, it was interesting to see the fans getting on his back a little bit at the weekend. I've seen him 2 or 3 times now, and I'm not totally convinced that he's got the right attitude for it. Maybe that will change. Maybe there's a bit of frustration on his part as well, because I know he's been coming back from an injury at the end of last season too. But there's a lot still to happen for Rangers, and they're going to Switzerland not in top form, and it's going to have to be one of those where they do grind it out. Now, having seen Servette last week, they may well grind it out. And if they do, it's worth €5 million, I think it is. And they're into the kind of final playoff round for the Champions League. If they're out, then they go straight into the Europa League, which, for me, in all honesty, maybe wouldn't be a terrible place for Rangers to be this season anyway. But yeah, it's quite a big task for them, even with Servette being relatively ordinary. I don't think Rangers are in a position at the moment yet where you could say they're much ahead of looking a little bit ordinary themselves.
Mm. I've heard a few people saying this, actually, that they'd be quite happy for Rangers to drop out at this stage and go into the Europa League. The reason for
Rangers
that is...
Rangers fans, Laura.
Yeah, Rangers fans, the reason for that would be they get a chance at a longer run, more a chance of winning the tournament and actually having been able to compete, as opposed to going to the Champions League like last year, where it's just humiliation after humiliation. On the counter argument to that, though, is, well, you get a good payday from getting into the Champions League. Surely you want the kind of the glamour group stages to start with. And then if you get your results right, then drop into Europa League afterwards and go on your run after that. Surely that's the dream scenario here.
Well, I mean, I think like that last bit there that you outlined about, you know, just kind of get your glamour games in and then hopefully get your results right that you can drop into the Europa League. I mean, that was really a scenario that Rangers fans had best part of 12 months ago, because you had Liverpool, Napoli and Ajax, which is a pretty glamorous group. Mm-hmm. And as it is, they didn't get the results right. And, you know, beating 7-1 at home by Liverpool, which is just
easier said than done.
Yeah, you know, just such a bizarre night for Rangers fans to witness at Ibrox. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that I think Rangers fans would prefer for the team to go into the Europa League. I think Rangers fans would prefer to get a glamorous group, beat everybody and go on and win the competition. But that's not going to happen. I think the sensible thing, you know, I mean, yeah, absolutely. It would be great if you could go in, get a respectable set of results, finish third, go into the Europa League, maybe get a bit of a run there. We saw what happened with Rangers a couple of years ago. Fantastic memories for the supporters, even if they didn't win the competition in the end. But is this squad right at this moment equipped to do that? I'm not sure it is. In a few months' time, when they've had a bit of time to gel, and there is a lot of gelling still to be done, I don't doubt that there are good players who have come in, but they're not gelling yet. I don't think they're equipped to do it in this season of the Champions League. You know, fast forward 12 months, they might have the opportunity, if Rangers can get into the Champions League, then to do it. I think if you're, you know, sitting with a sensible hat on, yeah, probably getting into the Europa League and having a bit of a run would be good, not just from a being competitive point of view in Europe, but I think also as well, you know, getting a hiding from Liverpool and Ajax, you know, it didn't help Rangers when they then went back to domestic football last season. So, you know, that inconsistency of, you know, getting turned over 7-1 by Liverpool, but then having to turn it around and being the team expected to beat Dundee United or whoever it was in the next game, that's a really, really difficult thing to go from one to the other and back and forth. So I think for the sake of, you know, home form, if you like, in Scotland itself, it might not be the worst thing if they go into the Europa League, because it might lead to a better consistency of result at home. And with the increased prize money in next season's Champions League and the new format, I would argue that if you're going to miss out on one and get the other, I think most Rangers fans and Celtic fans as well, obviously Celtic fans are in this season, but if they were in this position too, they would accept not getting in this season in exchange for winning the league this season and getting into next season's Champions League, where the rewards are far greater.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's also, let's face it, in this game anyway, the omens are good for Rangers, because Servette have actually failed to win any of their last six matches within regulation time. So they've drawn five, they've lost one. I know they qualified to get to Rangers, but that was in added time. The only time Servette faced Scottish opposition before this as well, interestingly, was against Aberdeen, which ended in 1985. Ended in a 1-0 defeat. So Scotland beats Switzerland. That will be the result. Hopefully in Hibs as well. That would be nice. Moving on to the other games over the weekend. Aberdeen lost 3-1 to Celtic, and probably what was the best kind of performing Aberdeen side I've seen against Celtic in years. They were absolutely excellent. I don't know if any of you guys saw the game, but they gave Celtic an absolute doing in the first half. And even when they were 2-1 down, Aberdeen kept the intensity up really high. I have good hopes for Aberdeen. I think they've got a few more players coming in.
Particularly the period right before they scored their goal. They had 3 or 4 chances in 3 or 4 minutes, applied good pressure. And as you say, in the second half, they played well too. I didn't see very much of that, but I read about it.
Oh, they were so good.
Yeah, you know, so that bodes pretty well for Aberdeen, you would think. What I would say is that Rangers, who we spoke about earlier, would they go to Pittodrie and win that game? I don't know if they would. Celtic, to their credit, weren't absolutely brilliant, but still found a way to win it. You know, and it took until 6-7 minutes from the end to confirm it. But you know, they're the team to beat in Scotland at the moment, and they turned in a performance and a result that suggests that that's the case as well.
Yes, a little concern for Celtic fans. Cameron Carter-Vickers was taken off at half-time, but it looks like they're getting in this lad from Elfsborg, Gustav Lagerbielka. And I just love his surname, because I really, really want to see Celtic use Underworld by Born Slippy. It's like, if he scores, it'd be so good. I just want to hear Lager, 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 Lager. But there you go. St Mirren, an early own goal from former St Mirren captain Joe Shaughnessy, gave the buddies the lead. And then Michael Mandron as well made it 2-0 before Dundee pulled one back. Rattling through here, guys. Ross County, their first win of the season, overcoming a struggling St Johnstone. We spoke about it last week, Laura, that St Johnstone can't get any traction at all right now. And even the manager, Stephen McLean, came out in a scathing, not attack on his players, but he said the performance was totally unacceptable.
I think you could argue it was an attack on the players. It was very... Well, I think most people would say it was harsh, and he was hard on them. I would argue that he didn't go far enough. This is... Like, the St Johnstone thing's a project that's been going on since they won the Cup, basically. They've been treading water. The squad has been ageing. They've not really invested in any real talent. They've not replaced the likes of Ali McCann and Jamie McCart. Mm-hmm. Their injury list just now, like, in fair play for everything they've done wrong, their injury list is horrendous. So they're suffering from a lot of bad luck in that sense. But they're so behind on the recruitment. And Stephen McLean comes out and he says they've got laboured movement with and without the ball. They've lacked creativity. They lack general collective determination. And I think that's what you want to hear as a St Johnstone fan, is actually coming out there and lambasting them. Look, what he says to the players in the dressing room could be completely different. And what he says individually to certain boys will also probably be very different. But I think coming out post-match after such a terrible performance and a terrible start to the season in general, I think that is exactly how hard horrific. He had to go. And the depressing thing is, he's basically written off. They play Celtic next. Obviously, they've got the week off for the League Cup coming up, where they've got a friendly coming up. But then they play Celtic, and they've already written that one off. They go away to Celtic, and they're talking about how the next time they go to McDermott Park, things will be different. So the fact they've already written off their next league game on this terrible run, it's just not a good time for them right now.
Yeah, it's horrible. The thing is, though, Laura, how do you strike that balance with trying to keep unity within the squad? If you're managers, you see a lot of the top managers after a difficult performance, you see them coming out. If it's Jose Mourinho or whoever, even Jurgen Klopp will come out and he'll defend the players to the absolute hilt. But you know, sometimes you have to be honest. But is this the right time when things are so low?
I think a lot of it depends on how he copes behind the scenes and how he manages, because it depends completely on what he's saying to them. If he is dealing with them well as a person and as a coach and a leader, then they shouldn't get hung up on what he says to the public, because what football figures say publicly is all part of a pantomime. And it is to keep fans happy, it's to keep the media happy, it's to save face, it's to set a narrative, and it's to have a completely different objective to what he's saying behind the scenes. He could be going there and he could be actually saying behind the scenes, you know what, Ross County were awful today and they didn't deserve it, but like they got lucky, blah, blah, blah. And he would look stupid coming out and saying that publicly, but his complete tone could be different behind the scenes. And I think it's one that if he controls that behind the scenes, I think it's okay to come out and say this publicly the way he has and go harder.
Yeah, maybe. The defending for the opener, for Kyle Turner, was shocking. But the Conor Randall goal was pretty tidy as well. But there you go. We'll see. And I hope things turn around for St Johnstone fans in the future. Elsewhere, looking at the divisions below, Queen's Park are the only championship side with a 100% winning start. They defeated Arbroath 2-1 thanks to goals from Barry Hepburn and Rory Patton, ex-Queen of the South. Go on, Patton, son. It's the first time, in fact, the Spiders have kicked off a league campaign with back-to-back victories since 2007-2008. So who knows? Maybe it'll come down to the last day of the season again, Laura. and they'll screw it up one more. That's what you're praying for. In League One, Stirling Albion, also a perfect start to life for them in League One. They beat Alloa 1-0 after Dale Carrick's late penalty secured the 3 points for Darren Young's newly promoted side. The Beanos have only lost one of their last 26 matches in all competitions. Fucking mental. Bonnyrigg Rose in League Two, the only winners, in fact. Pretty tough weekend in that division. They swept away Clyde 2-0 at New Douglas Park. Goals from Jason Jarvis, just makes me think of Jack Jarvis. and Bradley Barrett. Really rare to see two alliterated goal scorers Our names, can names be alliterated? Yes, I guess they can. Quite cool. But Robbie Horne, the manager there, level on points, their side, with top of the table, Peterhead and Stranraer. It's just mad everywhere, guys. And I think that's it for another episode of the Scottish Football Show. Have you enjoyed it, Laura?
I have enjoyed it. It's been good.
Oh, good. It's good to have you back, Andrew. Thanks for joining us, mate. Have you enjoyed it?
I have enjoyed it. I'm quite enjoying the fact that there's a slight delay with Laura, and it really sounds like she's thinking through every answer she gives us.
Yeah, it's really funny.
That's a delayed laugh.
Delayed laugh as well. We can all fix it in post. That classic media saying that all editors and camera ops despise. But yeah, a week of tense European football for us to enjoy or watch between our fingers. Let's hope all sides progress. Have we mentioned the coefficient yet? We love the coefficient. Let's bring back the points for that. We'll see. We'll see. If you have enjoyed this, go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Yes, you can see our lovely faces for radio on there, but we're also on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and what else are we on, Laura? Have I missed anything?
Instagram.
Oh, the old gram. We're on the gram. There you go. All right,
hey, Dad.
Time for you to go and listen to something. Yeah, on the gram. I don't think Dad say gram. I'm a dad. Let's say I'm a grammar. Oh God. Let's end this show now. It's getting worse. Right, go and listen to something else now. Bye.